It's really a great honor to be asked to address this distinguished audience in the memory of our beloved hand of the cause, Mr. Hassan Balyuzi. I feel that it's really appropriate now, all of us, to pay a very great tribute to the memory of that great soul. He was one of those who was appointed as a hand of the cause, as it was mentioned, and he was, his great-grandfather was one of the two brothers of the wife of the Bab. That's his relation to the Bab. And his great scholarly work is well known. The subject that has been given to me is not a common subject to talk about at a peace conference. I don't think any international conferences which are held about peace that they want to talk about the soul. You know, the soul, many peoples of the world do not think about the soul. Perhaps millions of peoples even don't know they have a soul, or if they do, they never think about it. And yet, the soul is the greatest motivating power within man. And it is the knowledge of the soul which will enable us to appreciate our motives and our functions and our life. You know, the soul is a spiritual reality. It's not something that you can discuss it in the light of physics or mathematics. It's a spiritual reality. And in order to understand it, the only way we have to understand, not the soul itself, because we shall never understand the reality and the essence of the soul, shall never understand it. But we perhaps will be able to appreciate its characteristics and its powers. And therefore, the only source we have to appreciate and understand something about the soul is to turn to the holy books of various religions. Because the idea of the soul, that we have a soul, really, has been given to us through the teachings of these great world religions. But up until now, humanity had not reached a stage to be able to appreciate the nature of the soul. And so, the prophets and the founders of great religions, that we Baha'is refer to them as manifestations of God, like Christ, like Muhammad, for example, who was the latest of all, have spoken very little about it. In fact, there is only one short sentence which we know in Islam, describing the soul as to be having come from God. And that's all we know of the soul when we return to the holy books of all these religions. Now, one of the greatest contributions that Baha'u'llah has made to religious knowledge is that he has, in his writings, both Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá, they both have in their writings, have shed so much light on this subject of the soul, that if you compile their writings together, probably you will make one or two volumes. So much light has been shed on it. And by the way, there are other things that Baha'u'llah has, particularly in this age, shed light on to a great extent. One of them is the knowledge of God. What is God? Again, you will find this is one of his greatest contributions to religious knowledge. Another field that Baha'u'llah has particularly given a great deal of information about and understanding is in the realm of the founders of the world great religions, the manifestations of God. But the soul, particularly, that we are going to talk about is a very important aspect in our life. You know, Baha'u'llah mentions, I'm just paraphrasing his words, and perhaps before I say anything, I should say that everything that I will tell you about the soul is practically based on the teachings of Baha'u'llah. I may add my own way of saying it, but basically they come from there, because we have no other way of explaining it. Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha have explained to us that the soul is not a material thing, that you can push it into your body or pull it out of your body. It is not something which you can attach anything to it. It's exalted above exit or entry. It's not something you can take it out of your body and give it into a laboratory to test it for you. It's a spiritual entity, and Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha have told us that it is an emanation from the spiritual worlds of God. An emanation from the spiritual worlds of God. And this, we are told, the soul comes to us, is born, is created at the time of conception. That it did not exist before in this life or anywhere. And that it came at the time when a person is conceived. Now, when the first cell is created in the womb of the mother and the soul is associated with it, then this is the beginning of a human being. Now, I said the soul associated with the body. Really, we cannot say anything else, even association. When you say the soul is associated with the body, in itself is a relationship. Relationship with a material thing. And even that is not possible for the soul. For the soul to describe it in any way, we have no words for it. Because words are very inadequate tools for expressing a spiritual reality. But we have to use a word. So we say the soul is associated with the body. Abdul Baha has described this association of the soul and the body as the association of light and the mirror. If you look at the light, if you look at the mirror, you will find there is light in it. But really, the light is not in the mirror that you can take your hands and take it away. There is a relationship between the light and the mirror, that's all. The light comes from a different source. The mirror is a piece of metal. And if you break the mirror, nothing happens to the light. Abdul Baha has explained to us that this is the meaning. This is the way that God has created us in this way, that our soul. Now, before I go any further, I wanted to mention that, I mentioned first that we have to turn to the writings of the faith, writings of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha. There is no other way that we can understand and appreciate this spiritual reality, this great spiritual essence, which we call it the soul. But then there is another thing which could help us. And in order to understand that, I wanted to mention to you that in this creation that we come across with, this creation is one entity. There are not two different worlds. There is no such a thing as a spiritual world separate from this physical world. God's creation is one entity. And all the laws which run through the, say, physical world, they also, the same laws and the same principles lie, also pass through, go through in the spiritual worlds of God. The same laws and the same principles that you will find in nature, these same laws and principles are applied to the world of man. The same laws and principles are applied to religion. The same laws and teaching and principles are applied in the spiritual worlds of God. And so we find that since we know something about the laws of nature, we may be able to appreciate something of the spiritual laws as well, because they are similar. The similarity is very striking. The only difference is that when you have a law or a principle in nature, when it is applied to a higher level, you have to add certain characteristics to it. Certain characteristics, certain features are added to it, which you cannot find it in the lower kingdom. Now, I said this because it's a very important point for us to appreciate that one way of having some idea about the soul, some idea, I said, not necessarily to understand it, because we will never understand the soul, is to also look at nature. But looking at nature alone is not sufficient. We should look at nature and also look at the writings of Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá, and the combination of the two will enable us to understand something of the soul. I keep on saying we can understand something of the soul, or that we can only understand its characteristics, that we do not understand its essence. There is a tablet from Baha'u'llah that I want to mention it to you. There is a verse in Islam which says that if you want to know yourself, if you want to know God, you should know yourself. And one of the disciples of the Bab asked Baha'u'llah to give him the meaning of this verse. What does it mean that you should know, when you know yourself, you will know God? And Baha'u'llah revealed a tablet. And this tablet, you will find, is part of this tablet, is translated by the beloved guardian, by Shoghi Effendi, in the Gleanings. I think it's number 83. Now, in that, Baha'u'llah mentions that everything that we do in a human being is motivated by our soul. Everything that we do is motivated by the soul. And our mind is a manifestation of the soul. The soul manifests itself in the body. It appears in the body in the form of mind or intellect. The heart, which gives life, that also is a manifestation of the soul. Our senses are the manifestation of the soul. Our ear, hearing, our sight, all these things. But Baha'u'llah says the sum total of all these manifestations will not make the soul. If you put together all the manifestations of the soul in the body, it will never make the soul. So then he asked the question, what is the soul then? And then he answers it. He says, if you live as long as you like, you will never know the essence of your soul, the reality of your soul, because it's exalted above this world of matter. And he says, whenever a person reaches to that state of absolute absolute impotence, when you realize your impotence, that you shall never know the essence of your soul, then you reach to the point that you say, if I cannot know the essence of my soul, the reality of my soul, how can I ever know the essence and the reality of the creator of my soul, which is God? So you see, I keep on saying we shall never know the essence of our soul, but we can understand some characteristics of it, some characteristics according to our capacity. Now, I mentioned that how the laws of nature can help us. And then it appears in one of the writings again, you will come across this statement that in this life, everything that you come across in this life is a counterpart of something spiritual. Everything you come in this life, which is created by God, is a counterpart of something spiritual. Things in this life do not come about haphazardly. You see a tree here, for example. This tree is a counterpart of something spiritual in the spiritual worlds of God. The tree has got a counterpart in the world of man. The tree has a counterpart in the world of religion. You talk about the tree of knowledge, for instance, you see. It is a counterpart of this physical tree. So for everything which you see in this life, there is a counterpart. In the writings, there is one of the examples of this counterpart, which is given, a parallel, is that we are told, for example, that the sun is a counterpart of the founders of great world religions, the manifestations of God. The same quality that the sun has, the same function of the sun. The sun pours its energies upon this life and gives life to it. And so do the manifestations of God, the founders of great religions. They also pour their spiritual energies upon mankind. And so you can say the sun and the manifestations of God are counterparts of each other in different realms. Now, if we want to understand the soul, which is a spiritual thing, if we could find a counterpart for it in this life, something physical that is similar to it, that has the same characteristics, then when we study that counterpart, that physical counterpart, then we can get some ideas about the soul, some ideas. From the writings again, as I said, we cannot go alone on our own on this journey. We have constantly to seek the support and understanding from the writings. From the writings it appears that the counterpart, the physical counterpart of the soul in this life, is the embryo which grows in the womb of the mother. That is to say, whatever happens to the embryo, whatever stages the embryo grows in the womb of the mother, and for whatever purpose, the same thing applies to the soul. And when you look at the two, again, look at the writings, we will find Abdu'l-Bahá has given us several examples of the embryo being similar to the soul. And when you examine the characteristics of the embryo growing in the womb of the mother, it'll become very interesting parallels that you can draw. You see, the physical body of man is created at the time of conception, and one cell comes into being. That cell has nothing in it. There is nothing that you can see in this cell. You cannot see any limbs or organs or a person. But that cell has the capacity to multiply and eventually to become a perfect human being. It's the same thing with the soul. When the soul comes to us at the time of conception, that soul has nothing, has no virtues, no qualities, no perfections, but it can acquire them in this life. It has no knowledge, it can acquire it in this life. It has no virtues, no perfections, it can acquire them in this life, of whatever period it may be. So you see, there was a similarity. Another similarity is that the embryo grows gradually within the womb of the mother. It gradually acquires limbs and organs. And the soul is the same way. It gradually acquires qualities and perfections. It takes it a long time in this life to acquire these qualities and perfections. Well, I am using this particular similarity purely to help us to understand something. And what I am saying will never be the soul. I want to repeat this over and over again, but it gives us some idea of our soul. You see, another thing which you will find happens is that the embryo must grow in the womb of the mother. And that's its place. It's not growing anywhere else. It is attached to the womb of the mother. It's its home. And the same thing is with the soul. The soul is got an association with our